Okay, I'm going to call this meeting of House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is 9:13 a.m. I recall that I said I didn't need a script today. This is the first time I've ever done that before, just for the record. I think we left pretty late last night. We do have for quorum Representative Hannon, Representative Bynum, Representative Shragi, Representative Co-Chair Shragi, Representative Co-Chair Josephson, Representative Galvin, and myself, Co-Chair Foster. And just as a reminder, folks can mute their cell phones. We have before us the elections bill. That's SB 64. And where we left off yesterday, also have with us Representative Shragi and Representative Jimmy. And where we left off is we were doing an introduction with Mr. David Dunsmore. So if you could come back up to the table, Mr. Dunsmore. Ms. Sonia Kawasaki, you're more than welcome to come to the table as well if you'd like. And it looks like we left off on slide 17. And so we're almost halfway through. I think there were 41 slides, I think 42, but the end was a question slide, maybe second to the last one, I can't remember. But let's see, is there anything I'm forgetting? So we're going to go until 9:55, and then we'll take a five-minute break for us, but also for the finance staff to switch everything over for our 10 a.m. meeting. So we've got a hard stop at 9:55. And then we'll go into the other two bills we have at that meeting. So with that, Mr. Dunsmore and Ms. Kawasaki, thanks for being back.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm David Dunsmore, staff to Senator Wilikowski. Before I continue with the presentation, Senator Wilikowski had three questions from last night that he wanted me to address on the record. First, to clarify on the question of the cost for what a signature verification would be. In previous legislation, the Division of Elections had submitted a $5 million fiscal note for the Capitol for the machinery and $80,000 annually for operating costs. We had been told in conversations with Division of Elections and stakeholders that the cost would probably be closer to $12 million now, given inflation and also the need. That fiscal note was assuming only one machine in each region, but the capacity necessary to process ballots at the speed which we would expect to have election results reported would require multiple machines in some regions. The other thing, a committee member asked me to double check and verify that District 18 was in fact the district that had the highest number of absentee ballots rejected. After last night's recess, I went back and reviewed that, and that is correct. And the third thing Senator Wilikowski wanted me to address was that the committee had questions about whether there was any evidence that the witness signature serves as a deterrent to fraud. This was reviewed by the Alaska Superior Court, and this is an order that we can provide to the committee. Is the case of Arctic Village Council v. Kevin Meyer. I will just briefly read a relevant part that really kind of succinctly and this is, we'll provide this order to the committee. This is on page 12 of the order. It says, as to voter fraud, defendant's briefing provides a lengthy example of such an instance, but the witness signature requirement played no role in detection of the fraud. When asked at oral argument whether the witness requirement had ever played a role in detecting fraud, counsel for defendants could not identify any instance in recent memory and was not sure whether it had played a role in detection in the more distant past. Based on the record before it, the court cannot find that the witness signature requirement is an effective tool for detecting voter fraud. Moreover, according to the Heritage Foundation, voter fraud in Alaska is exceedingly rare, with only 3 reported cases, none of which involved ineligible voting. As for public confidence, the witness requirement may lend an air of formality to the absentee voting process, but other aspects of Alaska's election laws ensure the integrity of absentee voting, including the fact that voters are required to provide identification and sign absentee ballots under penalty of perjury, which carries a criminal penalty of up to 10 years of incarceration. The witness requirement does not even play a consistent role in verifying that the person who voted the ballot is who they claim to be. This is because a witness 18 years of age or older has no obligation to review the voter's identification, unlike a notary witness.
Great, thank you. I'd also like to recognize that we have with us Representative Tomaszewski, Representative Vallard. So you had 3 bits of information that were being relayed from Senator Wilikowski. Happy to take questions on this, and then we'll go back to slide 17 and proceed with the presentation. So I've got Representative Stapp and then Allard, Representative Stapp.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Foster, through the Chair. So I think there's a big difference between the terminology, a deterrent, and then fraud, right? So I think the witness signature, I'm fairly certain Carol Beecher testified that they think of it as a deterrence technique to someone who may look to commit fraud as opposed to actually committing fraud. So my question again that I asked earlier was, if you want to remove the witness signature for absentee ballot, like what other mechanism have you guys discussed to ensure that the individual who is returning the ballot is indeed the same individual? If you don't want to have a second or third party witness, I think I'm open to that. I'm just curious, like, how are you actually verifying? Is there another mechanism that you can use to verify that the ballot coming back is coming from the person?
Mr. Densmore?
Through the chair, Representative Stapp, the same method that the Division of Elections already uses for question ballots, which is to verify the voter's identifier, would be, so this would create a uniform, consistent standard. Because for question ballots, the division uses the identifier to verify the voter's identity.
Yeah, fault in the scripture.
Representative Stout?
Yeah, so I'll give you a practical example here. So the identifier is just the indication on the ballot, right? So when I volunteered down at the Fairbanks Rescue Mission, right? And I remember during the special election, there was a stack of about 100 ballots that had gotten mailed there to people who, at one point, their residency was the rescue mission, and they were sitting, unopened. And I thought, like, okay, well, what stopped someone from sending that back? Now, I don't think anyone did that in this case, by the way, but, you know, there was a stack of 100 absentee ballots that got mailed to a place. The individuals weren't there anymore. And if I take away a mechanism, even if it's a relatively ineffective mechanism and a witness signature, I mean, what would stop somebody from hypothetically just filling out ballots if they got 100 in the mail like that and sending them back? How would you know?
Through the chair, Representative Stapp, in that hypothetical, person would be committing crimes that carry significant prison. I'm not an attorney, but I do not believe that forging a witness signature would be an additional crime on the ones they would already be committing. So that person would already be committing serious crimes.
Yeah, fault in the scripture.
Follow up?
Well, clearly, fraud is already a serious claim. You know, obviously, it's not something that happens often in a case of voting, but I'm sure it does happen in occasions. You know. But at least with the witness signature, if the same person's filling out the signature both times, it's fairly obvious to see that their handwriting's the same, I guess. So the point is, like, how would you know that that individual is the individual who sends the ballot back if you have no mechanism to determine?
Through the chair, Representative Stapp, the Division of Elections does not review as to whether the handwriting is the same for both the witness and the voter. That is not something that's being reviewed, and it's been repeatedly testified that any mark in the the witness thing will be considered a valid witness for having the ballot counted.
Follow up, Mr. Co-Chair.
Follow up.
Yeah, so I don't dispute that. I'm just saying, just because we are not, I mean, shouldn't we do something to verify? And I don't particularly care if it's the witness signature or not, but I mean, like, shouldn't we have some sort of mechanism that says, hey, the absentee ballots that are coming back, like, we can tell the voters of the state with high confidence that we are sure to the point of near certainty that the people who are sending the ballots back are the people who are supposed to be getting the ballots through the chair.
Mr. Dinsmore?
Through the chair, Representative Stapp, I believe we already have that level of certainty for question ballots, and this would just have absentee ballots be adjudicated in the same manner.
Okay.
Okay, and on the list I've got Representative Allard, Representative Josephson, Representative Bynum, Representative Allard.
Thank you, and I appreciate you. Thank you, Co-Chair, coming back with those results. I know that District 40 had the highest percentage of rejected ballots, but District 18 had the highest number of rejected ballots. I'm not as concerned with the witness signature. I think that's something that I believe we could move away from. My concern is that when you have a signature on the ballot, and maybe you can, because I'm kind of going where Representative Stapp went, what are you doing to verify the signatures? For example, you're pretty up on the laws. We know that the municipality of Anchorage will take a ballot. They have people that sit there. They take the signature based off the individual's driver's license, and they can compare the two signatures, and then they go through a cure process. So I'm wondering, because I still don't have a solid answer, what are you doing to verify in this bill the signatures?
Through the chair, Representative Allard, there are not currently signature verification provisions in this bill.
Okay. May I?
Representative Allard?
That's a problem, because anybody can get a ballot and just sign it and send it in. That's voter fraud if they intend to do that. The other thing is, I know you read from the Heritage Foundation that we have the lowest voter fraud in the state of Alaska. But do we really even know what our voter fraud is? Because we don't even have anybody in the Division of Elections to investigate. That's a detailed team to investigate. They might be like, well, we might, and then they turn it in like they did with a former representative that was part of this legislature. Do you have anything in the bill that says we're going to implement? I'm asking for the record. I read the bill, but I'm asking to put on the record. Is there anything in the bill that says we're going to put a team together to investigate voter fraud within the Division of Elections?
Through the chair, Representative Allard, there is not a provision like that currently in the bill. That's potentially something, I'm sure Senator Wilkowski would be open to discussing. I believe that the current protocol is that when there's indications of fraud, and there's some that are in statute. For example, the Division of Elections is required whenever someone has attempted to vote twice, they are required to refer that matter to the Department of Law, which handles the investigation.
Thank you. And just a couple more.
Representative Ballard.
Thank you. I didn't see anywhere in the bill where we're going to take out how do you verify a voter if all they're walking up with is a utility bill saying, I'm allowed to vote, here's my name? It could be anybody walking up to you without a picture ID other than here's a utility bill. Is there anywhere in the bill that you believe that that's correcting that? It should be either a government ID, whether it's a military ID, whether it's a driver's license, whether it's a state ID, whether it's a BIA card, or whether it's a passport.
Through the chair, Representative Allard, so the provisions in this bill concerning the use of utility bills or similar identifications for IDs, it under current law, that utility bill, check, paycheck, or other government document is just required to be current. In this bill, we are requiring that document to be from within the last 60 days. This was a proposal brought to us by the Senate Minority Leader that Senate agreed to include in the bill.
Thank you. And I would want to make sure that if we're going to say a minority leader from the other body has said something, I would be highly suspect because I'm hearing different from that minority leader from the other body. They aren't bringing those some of the things that we're saying here that it's all about them. It's been skewed a little bit and twisted and not fully what they've expected to happen. Okay, so we don't have anything that says we're only going to do picture ID with government ID. We don't have anything that's in place to verify signatures at all. And then we don't have anything that says we're going to investigate and put a team together in the Division of Elections for voter fraud. And then I wanted to hit back, if I may, that I wanted to clarify because I think it might have been a little confusing for some. In District 18, there were 72 ballots that were rejected. And that was 4.4% of the votes who had voted. And then the District 40, there were 26 rejected ballots, but that was 5.2% because of the amount of people who came out. So that's it. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Okay, I want to also note that we have with us Representative Johnson, and in the lineup, I've got Representative Josephson, Bynum, and Galvin. Is that Representative Josephson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Densmore, I have just assorted questions. Of course, they all link to the topic, but they're serial in fashion. On this issue of House District 18, if Representative Allard is correct on these 72 voters, many of them, not all, but many of them would have been service members who for some technicality, and there are good technicalities, I understand that, were deprived of the right to vote. Is that your understanding?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, that is my understanding. We obviously can't know for sure who these specific voters are, but District 18 is demographically unique in that it is the only House district in the state where the majority of the population is on a military base.
Okay. And am I right that the conventional wisdom, and I think data, support that often service members vote conservatively? Is that it? Do you know anything that runs dramatically counter to that?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, in my professional experience, that would be correct.
Okay.
Follow up?
Point of information, maybe?
Representative Allard?
Thank you. May I ask Representative Joseph a question? Why does that matter? I mean, military is military. Why would it matter if they lean conservative or Democrat?
Representative Josephson?
Or whatever party they belong to.
It matters because I think, as is reflected in the shortening of the period of, for example, a utility bill as an identifier, that the bill has some, and we could argue what these terms mean, classically more conservative and precautionary elements. That's why.
Okay.
Now, if I may continue.
Representative Josephson.
Mr. Densmore, isn't the process relative to the concern about people who are ineligible fraudulently taking an absentee ballot and casting that ballot, isn't the process that, for example, I don't know how we deal with the Tom Williamses and John Smiths, where there's many of those people with those sorts of names. But if you have a student at the University of Washington with a relatively unique name, and they cast purportedly a ballot from Seattle, it arrives, and they should never cast another ballot in that cycle. So if someone is casting a ballot claiming to be that person, that gets red flagged, doesn't it? Isn't that sort of the backup system at play?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, yes, that is correct. And in fact, if you have an instance of someone voting twice, the Division of Elections is required by law to report that. In my experience, when there have been instances of people voting twice, it is usually like someone elderly or someone with dementia who it is determined it was not criminal and charges aren't often brought. But the Department of Law does investigate when there are reports of multiple voting.
Follow up. And have you ever heard of a circumstance where someone with a relatively unique name like my own voted and was told, your vote is fraudulent because you've already cast your vote? And that individual said, this is an outrage. I've not cast my vote, and I would so swear under a penalty of perjury. Have you ever heard of a circumstance in Alaska like that?
Through the chair, Representative Justison, I'm not aware of that.
Okay. Last follow-up.
Representative Justison?
Did Ms. Beecher, yesterday, she seemed to indicate that if somebody marked Mickey Mouse as a witness signature, that would draw attention. Has she consistently said that in all the hearings? Has she testified on that issue in previous hearings in this building?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, I think you might, if you would like to clarify with her, it would probably be more appropriate to ask her. But what she has testified repeatedly is if someone writes Mickey Mouse in the line, that ballot will be counted. What I heard her say yesterday is that probably would raise a red flag for them, that they would send it to the Department of Law to investigate. But what would be consistent with her previous testimony is Department of Law probably would investigate. Perhaps there'd be a criminal investigation come out of it. But from the division's perspective, they would end up counting that ballot.
Thank you.
And just so I know who's online, I don't believe Carol Beecher's online, but it looks like Michaela Thompson, Division Operations Manager with the Division of Elections, is online. Ms. Thompson, is that correct? Ms. Beecher is not online right now.
For the record, Michaela Thompson with the Division of Elections. That is correct. Director Beecher is not able to be online today.
Okay, thank you. Will she be available at the later today? I think 1:30 it's public testimony, so we may or may not need her then. Will she be available later today?
I can definitely check in to that for you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, on the list I've got Representative Bynum, Galvin, Jimmy, and Allard. Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. At this time I'm going to pass.
Okay, Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. And Co-Chair Josephson covered a bit of this, but I just wanted to, for the record, make sure that I'm understanding the process for registration versus voting. So as one goes to register in Alaska or registers online, they must have a photo ID. Is that correct? Through the chair?
Through the chair, Representative Galvin. Ms. Thompson can probably speak better to it. I don't know if it's required to be a photo ID, but it is required to be identification. The things like the utility bills, paychecks, other government checks are only for voting itself. But they're like when you register with a voter registrar, they are supposed to check your ID to make sure you're who you say they are. Or if you register without, the first time you vote, you will be required to provide an identification other than the utility bills or other documents.
Thank you. As a registrar, I have found this responsibility to be quite onerous, and I've been very careful to make sure that the any ID that they use is up to date, and there's just a lot to, I think, walk through to make sure that those who become registered are truly Alaskan, well, truly citizens and live in Alaska. And then the other piece I wanted to note is that my understanding is that vast number of voters who walk in to vote in an in-person voting do use a photo ID. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, I don't know if that's something that there's any quantifiable data collected on, but in my experience and in conversations I've had with election administrators and poll workers, I believe that is correct.
And I appreciate that may be different in places like, you know, Hooper Bay, where folks don't need a driver's license and oftentimes don't even use an ID. But I just want to make sure I'm appreciating that difference. And the other thing I have to ask is whether my understanding is when we register to vote, they're on the bottom of that registration form, it says that by law, you may not impersonate or be someone else, or it is a crime. Is that something that's still present so that those who are so that those understand the law? I guess what I'm getting at is that I feel like we have deterrence and that we have laws. And if somebody is presenting themselves as someone else, trying to fabricate forms and present someone as a voter who is not, they are brought to trial. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, yes, it is correct. I have an absentee ballot envelope right here, and the very top is an affidavit that the voter must swear under penalty of perjury.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that because I think it's important. We've been thinking of, you know, how do we make sure that this is a system of integrity, and I think that is very important. And especially knowing that we uphold these laws when we hear of any fraud, in my understanding, I just want to appreciate that we have a system in place that I think, at least so far until I've been proven wrong, has worked in terms of deterrence. Thank you.
Representative Jimmy.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster, and through the chair. So to me, the heart of the issue is, are we more worried about wrongly telling Alaskans that Alaskan voters that they cannot vote, or are we wrongly telling non-Alaskan voters that they can vote? So if you like statistics, we can call this the difference between type 1 and type 2 error. So my question is, how many cases of voter frauds have been charged in the state of Alaska in the last 15 years?
Mr. Densmore?
Through the chair, Representative Jimmy, I don't know that number off the top of my head, but I believe it is a handful.
8 cases. Since 2011, there have been only 8 cases of voter fraud charged in the state of Alaska. That's the whole state of Alaska. 8. Follow-up?
Follow-up.
How many of those cases have been charged in the bush?
Through the chair, Representative Jimmy, I understand from your staff that the answer is 1.
You get a door prize. I have a couple more questions.
Representative Jimmy.
How many absentee ballots have been rejected in the bush in Alaska in the last 2 elections?
Through the chair, Representative Jimmy, I don't know the exact number, but I know it's in the hundreds.
So let's look at the last 4 years of the rejected absentee ballots in the bush in Alaska. Let's imagine that everywhere absentee ballots that show up without witness signature is a real ballot cast by an Alaskan. You all know as well as I do, Division of Election doesn't look at anything, but if there is a witness signature at all, there is no way to know if a witness is real. In 2022, 670 people in the bush that had absentee ballots rejected because there was no witness signature. In 2024, 24 people in the bush that had absentee ballots rejected because there was no witness signature. So how many people is that in total? 694. And compared to how many recorded cases of voter fraud in the bush in the last 4 years versus 0 recorded cases of voter fraud in the bush in the last 4 years. So 694 minus 0, 694. The most recent election in 2024, the general election, the one which I was elected in House District 38, 1/3 of the ballots were rejected due to the lack of signatures, witness signatures. So we're talking a lot about the boogeyman of elections, fraud today here. But I see the truth, and this is disenfranchisement. It doesn't make sense that with a fairly low overall voter turnout, that there are more people whose voice is being taken away than there are folks working double time to vote in someone else's name. Would you agree or disagree?
Through the chair, Representative Jimmy, I would agree, and I think you've really highlighted a good point about like why this is such a critical election integrity issue, that just as it is a threat to election integrity if there's fraud, or you know, people are concerned about the fact that there's more registered voters in the state than there are adult population, and that's something that the Senate in this bill has passed and agreed to work on. It is also hurts the integrity of our election every time an eligible Alaskan is not able to vote because of a technicality that provides no meaningful protection whatsoever.
All right, Gliana, thank you.
Okay. In the lineup, I have Representative Allard, Stapp, and Bynum. Is there anyone else who wanted to be added to the queue? Representative Johnson. But before I go there, I did say yesterday that I would keep public testimony open and take up folks as they popped up. And we do have two people online, so I'd like to go to them. We do also have a big kind of the semi-official 1:30 where we'll be taking public testimony before we go to questions at that time. So I've got two people, Claire Boersma and Aiden Nicol, and we're going to go to public testimony for them. And we do have to be out of or done in about 10 minutes because the 10 a.m. meeting will trigger and procedurally could nullify this meeting. So just to keep things clean, I want to be done by 9:55. So if the two people online could keep their testimony to 5 minutes or less, then that will get us to the 9:55 a.m. meeting. So with that, Ms. Claire Boersma, looks like you're calling in from Anchorage. If you can put yourself on the record, state your name and your affiliation.
Hi, good morning. This is Claire Boersma. I'm in Anchorage. I'm a lifelong resident of Anchorage, and I am speaking on my own behalf today. Thank you for continuing this hearing and for the opportunity to testify. I will be brief. I am calling in support of this measure. I have served in various volunteer capacities over the years as a poll worker, a poll watcher, a voter registrar before automatic registration. And I'm enthusiastically in support of making sure eligible Alaska voters are able to exercise their right to participate in elections. You know, especially in rural Alaska, voters need more access to predictable, reliable, and user-friendly voting. That's a huge issue. But even in Anchorage, where I live, I have friends and relatives who have been stymied in their attempts to cast a vote. People know that I'm interested in helping folks be able to vote, and they often contact me with questions or concerns about their voting process, even though I'm not a real expert. I strongly support the establishment of a ballot curing process. Anyone can make an honest mistake or an omission, and especially in a jurisdiction like Anchorage, where we have municipal by-mail elections with different procedures, it can be really confusing for folks who are busy with their everyday lives and only cast a vote a couple times a year. So, you know, I have friends and relatives who've had their ballots tossed out because they forgot a witness signature, they forgot their own signature, something wasn't quite right. And this makes no sense to me. I think voters who go to the trouble to request a ballot, they research their vote, they submit a ballot, they deserve to have their voices heard wherever they live in Alaska. And while I think there are a number of other provisions in this bill that make a lot of sense, those are the things that really stuck out to me when I heard about this this particular measure, and I hope you will move it forward. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. Do we have any questions from the committee? Seeing none, we'll go over to Aiden Nicol, calling in from Anchorage. If you can state your name and your affiliation.
For the record, my name is Aiden Nicol. I live in Anchorage, and I am representing the Alaska Center.
OK. Okay, please proceed.
I work at the Alaska Center researching voting issues, and I'm calling today in support of SB 64. In particular, I want to highlight the urgent need for a rural community liaison in the Division of Elections. In the 2024 primary, Olson-Kotovic and Wales failed to open, denying the opportunity to vote to over 250 registered voters. Also in that primary, polls opened late in several villages. In Anaktuvitas, they were open for just 30 minutes, and only 7 of the 258 registered voters there could cast ballots. These closures were due to a breakdown in communication between the Division of Elections and rural communities, and due to the DOE's failure to secure reliable poll workers. The person dedicated to coordinating between rural communities and the DOE would make these failures less likely. This would prevent Alaskans from being denied the right to vote, as rural Alaskans repeatedly are. I would also like to advocate for an addition to the bill today. Representative Shragi's election bill, HB 43, includes a provision that would begin early voting 30 days before the election rather than the current 15 days. This would be an important change for rural areas. Most mail sent in Alaska is not postmarked until it passes through Anchorage or Juneau, and this means that rural voters must send their mail ballots much earlier than urban voters in order to have them postmarked on time. This November, 268 ballots from rural areas weren't counted because Postal Service issues kept them from reaching Juneau in time. It may take years to fix these logistical issues, but right now, we can extend the beginning of early voting to 30 days before the election to give rural voters more time to cast a ballot. Across the nation, other states have an average of 23 days of early voting, and it is strange that, given the size and geography of our state, we would have fewer than this. I want to thank you all, as always, for your hard work to protect voting rights for all Alaskans. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Nickel. Do we have any questions of the committee? Okay, seeing none, we've got about 5 more minutes, and in the lineup I have Representative Allard, Stapp, Bynum, and Johnson, so let's go to Representative Allard, and then we'll adjourn out the meeting. Representative Allard.
Thank you. Do you by any chance know of the 72 rejected ballots in District 18, how many were military?
Through the chair, Representative Allard, I don't know that information. The Division of Elections reports absentee ballot statistics at the district level. I think it's a reasonable inference that most of the absentee ballots requested in that district are probably going to be from service members or family who are deployed outside of the state.
Thank you. May I? So 1,072 voted on J-Bear, and out of that, and there was about 2,300 in the entire district of 18, and you're assuming all 72 were coming from the military. Division of Elections has no information on it, so it's a complete assumption. They can't even determine who was military and who wasn't.
Through the chair, Representative Allard, I'm not assuming they're all military. I think it's a reasonable assumption that probably the majority of them are. But I also think that anytime 72 Alaskans have their right to have their vote counted denied for a technicality that serves no election integrity purpose, I think it's definitely an injustice if these are people who are actively serving their country. But it's an injustice when that happens to any American.
Thank you. And may I? Regardless of their serving their country, you are absolutely correct. Nobody should be disenfranchised. That's why we should have checks and balances in place. So what I'm hearing is that we don't know if they were military personnel, that we have no checks and balances in place to look at the signatures to verify. We have nobody in the state of Alaska to do any such investigation. I had 500 individuals when I was on the Anchorage Assembly that voted in the state of Alaska that also voted in another state. I turned the paperwork in, and guess what happened? Zero. Because we have nothing in place in the state of Alaska. We have nothing in place that says you have to have military ID, government ID, passport, driver's license, or anything else. It is very simple for any person in the state of Alaska to use a utility bill, forge a signature, go down to the title company, pull somebody's homeowner's information, and forge their signature on everything, and we have nothing in place to verify signatures. Criminals don't follow the law. Have you heard of the case Buckland versus Joe Miller?
Through the chair, Representative Allard, I'm not familiar with that case. I might be. I just don't recognize the caption.
Maybe Attorney Kloster is. And when we have the meeting again, I'll bring that information back. I also want the committee to be aware that when you have a PFD, there has to be two people. Two people have to witness in order for you to return your or get your PFD. And again, nobody is trained in the state of Alaska to do any investigation. So how would we know what voter fraud there is when all we say is Department of Law, who's understaffed, try to investigate it, and there's nobody trained professionally, nobody has any idea, nobody's an expert on it, and every other state has something in place. Thank you.
And, through the chair, Representative Allard, I wanted to thank you for bringing up the issue of the voter, the necessity for voter roll cleanup. This bill has pretty robust improvements. One thing that we learned in the process of creating previous legislation is federal law actually prevents us from removing someone from Alaska's list just because they have registered in another state. So in order to comply with federal law, we actually unfortunately have to either wait until they vote or we have to go through a notice process. So this bill adds several indicators of residency in other states to factors that will trigger the process and get those voters removed off the roll. So that's an important part of this bipartisan package.
Thank you. I would argue bipartisan. But I also wanted to say, when we verify the signatures and the voter rolls are supposed to be cleaned up, they didn't do anything. So 500 voters after the fact, because that's the only way we knew, because we waited until they voted, nothing happened. They didn't get a phone call. They didn't get a police officer sent to their house. They didn't even get removed from the voter rolls, and no investigation was done. 500 voters.
Okay, I'm going to go. Thank you, Representative Allard. I'm going to go ahead and adjourn out this 9 a.m. meeting. We do have the 10 a.m. meeting that will automatically kick in. And my intent is to allow the finance staff to change over the presentations on the screen. At our 10 a.m. meeting, we do have two bills. That's HB 90, Financial Literacy Program in Schools. And then we also have, we were supposed to have the SB 156, Alaska Commercial Fishing and Ag Bank, but that is not in our possession yet. So instead, we will take up HB 28, Teacher and State Employee Student Loan Program. And let's see here. I don't know if there is public testimony. There's no public testimony on those two bills. So with that, I'll go ahead and adjourn House Finance at 9:56 a.m.